Okay, so as usual, thanks the organizers for all the work they've done. They know who they are. So I will talk about some new things today, but to get to the new things, I have to review some of the older things. So the idea is to give a more geometrical understanding of this pure spinner formalism. And I'll get to why one wants such a motivation. But so pure spinner formalism is it's an alternative way for describing the superstring, which has at least space-time supersymmetry manifest. So there's still missing a world sheet principle. So the formalism as it stands is very useful in the sense that it can be used to study Ramon-Ramon backgrounds, and it can be used to compute amplitude in a much simpler way than in RNS formalism. But to understand it more completely, one would like to understand where it comes from, in the same sense that one understands where the RNS formalism comes from by just starting with world sheet supersymmetry. So the pure spinner formalism, the essential ingredient is you start with Green-Schwarz superstring. You write it as Siegel did using first order form for the theta. So you have, instead of writing a second order type action for theta with kappa symmetries, you write a first order, so the x's are the same as usual. And then you have to add some kind of ghosts, which comes from gauge fixing. And the answer seems to be that you just add a set of pure spinner ghosts. So pure spinner in 10 dimensions means that which turns out to imply that lambda has 11 degrees of freedom. Which, if you are forced to, you can parameterize in a non-Lorentz covariant way using this U5 description. So you can Wick rotate from SO91 to SO10, and then you can use a U5 subgroup of the SO10 to write lambda alpha in terms of these U5 variables. So one way to do it is...
You might want to stress that what's good about that is that the constraints are quadratic, and when you do that, you solve the constraints in terms of free variables.
Yes. So, as Ed also knows, of course, what's bad about it is that this parameterization is only valid locally in this space, as you'll see. So one way to write it is, you can write it as... I'll write a little bigger. So as you can see from this description, you can choose 11 of them to be independent, but these, so there are 5 of these. If you want, you can think of it being a 5 of U5, this would be a 10 bar of U5, this would be a singlet of U5. So these are how the 16 components split under U5. And you can see that this one depends on the inverse of gamma, which means it's not well defined when gamma equals 0. So this is somehow just a local description of the parameterization. So this would seem to be, well, let me just write one Q for getting into it. So Q is built out of these lambdas and these p's and thetas in a covariant way. So d alpha is the supersymmetric version of the fermionic momentum. So in Green-Schwarz language, this is just the constraints, fermionic constraints, half of first class, half of second class. So you can write it in terms of the p's and x's and thetas as Siegel did 15 years ago, 20 years ago. So there's a term which is cubic in theta, but the main thing to look at is this, which can be thought of in superspace as something like as not the supersymmetry generator, but the supercovariant derivative, which commutes with the supersymmetry generator. So this would be the analog of d alpha.
What is the range of alpha?
So alpha is 1 to 16. M is 0 to 9. And my gamma matrices...
So those are capital zeta.
That's right. So this is the worksheet version of the capital D. So these are 16 by 16 symmetric matrices. So I hope I can go over the gamma matrix algebra, but I'll assume people are familiar with it in this thing. Okay, so Q squared. So the D's satisfy a very simple OPE, as Warren also worked out. They have just a simple pole. Naively, it looks like you could get double poles, but you just have a simple pole where pi m is the supersymmetric version of the moment. So as in Green-Schwarz. And you can compute d with theta. It also just has a simple pole. Now, the claim is that this BRST operator has all the properties of the usual BRST operator in the sense that its cohomology at ghost number one is supposed to give you the physical spectrum. So I'm not going to go into the details yet about how that works, but if you want to discuss the OPEs of these fields, one also would like to include the OPEs of the lambdas. Yeah?
Do you find in this formalism all the cohomology concentrated, like only one ghost number?
No. Let me get to that in a second. You get the same as in bosonic string. You get cohomology at 1 and 2. The 2 is the same as 1, but it's like the field and the anti-field. And at 0 and 3 ghost number, you just get a single 0 mode, which corresponds to the ghost. So it's exactly what you expect. If one wants to construct the OPs of all the fields, one would also want to include these lambdas and W's. But because of this constraint, the W's has a gauge invariant. So this, people in the back probably can't see down below. So there's a gauge invariant, which is, I'm not going to use this anymore. Delta W which if you want, you can think of this as a gauge invariant generated by this constraint. So the way I'm going to describe this gauge invariant is I'm just going to allow gauge invariant combinations of W, which means that W can only appear to the Lorentz current, which is defined as the ghost current, so W lambda, and also the stress tensor. So the stress tensor is W dm. One can easily show that these are all gauge invariant if one requires lambda gamma lambda to be equal to zero. And now one wants the OPEs of these objects. So there are various ways to compute the OPEs. The easiest way is just to go back to this U5 parameterization I just erased and write down these variables in terms of the U5 variables and then just compute using free field OPEs. So that method is not manifestly covariant, but of course the OPEs you're going to get out are invariant. And what you find is that n with n has a double pole, which goes like -3. And then you get the usual Lorentz algebra out. J with J is more interesting, so you get a double pole of this type. And J with T, so this can have a cubic pole, which tells you the ghost number anomaly. So this has a pole which turns out to be -8, plus the usual thing. Finally, T with T, so this is just the ghost part of T, goes like, I guess it's -11, plus 11, or C equals 22. Okay, so these coefficients need to be computed, but it's not difficult to compute. Mm-hmm. Okay, now the formalism is slightly strange in the sense of, it's strange in various ways. So first of all, the d alphas, when you compute, so q squared is zero because of the this property for the pure spinners. But as you can see from the OP of D with D, it has a first class and a second class piece. So this is, of course, just Green-Schwarz first and second class piece. So Q is built out of second class constraints. So, okay. So these are the strange features. So Q involves second class constraints. So lambda, normally when one has ghosts, the ghosts are unconstrained. Here the ghosts are constrained. Okay, and also Q doesn't involve irizar constraint, at least not in a direct way. So it's difficult to see how it can possibly give the right cohomology. So this is some sense of the mysterious part of the formalism, and that's what I'll try to describe, at least in the second half of the talk, how this is, so after I go through the review, how this is reproduced in the n equals 2 way of describing this string. Okay, there are other reasons to try to understand this as an n equals 2. One nice feature about these n equals 2 formalisms is that we can try to go off-shell, so instead of requiring just n equals 2 superconformal invariant, one can ask just about n equals 2 Wilczek supersymmetry. And if one has a formalism in which one can go off-shell in that sense, then one can try to study backgrounds which maybe are complicated, but which have some linear sigma model approximation. Another reason to try to get some n equals 2 out of this is that one knows that one can understand the INS string as an n equals 2 string using this n equals 2 embedding. So that gives the possibility of trying to find some more direct equivalence between this formalism and the INS. Okay, so before getting to the n equals 2, one will need to understand, okay, so how can one hope of getting an n equals 2 out of this? So one has this Q, which one would like to interpret, at least the integrand. So one way to understand n equals 2, at least in the INS string, as is coming from these four objects, which you could construct at least for any, for the bosonic string also, but for an n equals 1 string, it's more natural because you get a c hat equals 2 n equals 2 string. So this is associated with the g minus. This is actually the t complete, so this is t matter plus t post. And this would be the chain. And the idea is that this has the same conformal weight as a twisted n equals 2. And in fact, it's critical if c hat equals 2. And when you do this structure for the INS string, you find that it is, in fact, c hat equals 2. So it's natural to try to associate g plus with lambda alpha d alpha. And then the question is, okay, what goes in the other places? And there one has to do a little bit of guesswork. And the guesswork is based essentially on trying to mimic the structure that one gets for computing amplitudes. So before going through what these other objects are, let me go back to reviewing how to compute scattering amplitudes using this.
So by n equals 2 string, you mean n equals 2 topological?
So it will be what we call the n equals 4 topological string. It will be c hat equals 2.
So more than this.
Well, when c hat equals 2, you can construct other generators from these. So, okay, so yeah, I'm not going to go into that. Okay, the question about cohomology, let me just answer that question briefly, and then I will go back to scattering it. Okay, so how can this possibly give the right cohomology if it doesn't, or if it has these properties? So the easiest way to see that it does work is just to give an example. So the easiest example is just the massless state. So for the open string, the massless state has to be ghost number 1. And if there's no tachyon, it can only be constructed from the Wilczek 0 modes. So ghost number 1 just means that it's linear in lambda. So the only thing you can write down is something of this form. And now we can compute QV equals 0.
Are you assuming there's no tachyon, or can you prove there's no tachyon?
Well, there's nothing here of negative conformal weight, so there's nothing you could construct. There's no sea ghost that you could construct to make the tachyon. So QV equals zero if you use the fact that d alpha just acts like the supercovariant derivative. This is just equal. This just tells you that lambda alpha, lambda beta, d alpha a beta is equal to zero, which turns out to be the Super-Yang-Mills equations of motion when written in terms of the Super-Yang-Mills gauge field. So just to recall how that works. In Super-Yang-Mills, when one works in superspace, it's natural to introduce both the connection for the gate for the supercovariant derivative and for the usual derivative. And if one works, for example, just for Maxwell, a super Maxwell, so these are superfields, of course, and you want to reproduce the usual Bianchi identity, so this in 10 dimensions turns out to put constraints on these gauge fields. So this implies that del alpha a beta, if you symmetrize in alpha and beta, has to be proportional to gamma m alpha beta times something. So in this case, am. Now in general, a symmetric bispinner in 10 dimensions also has a phi-form piece. So this implies that the phi-form piece of this is zero for any direction. And one can easily see that this equation of motion is precisely that, because this is a bispinner. The one-form part of lambda is zero because of this constraint, so you just get the five-form part contributing. So this precisely implies this. And in 10 dimensions, it turns out that this Bianchi identity implies the equations of motion. Now, of course, one also wants to get the...
I mean, actually, it's just q squared equals zero, right? If you covariant, if you replace, you write q in the background.
Yes.
Then it's just lambda alpha d alpha squared is zero.
In the background.
Well, I'm not sure what you're saying. Oh, yes. Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's the same cohomology I just computed. Okay, and the gauge transformation is, of course, delta V is Q of something. And omega now is ghost number zero, so Q of it is just going to be lambda alpha D alpha omega. And this is the usual gauge invariant. So this is delta A alpha. So this is, of course, just a linearized level, which is all you expect to see from the superstring vertex operators. So this works for the massless case, and one can check that it works also for the massive cases. I'm not going to go into that, but it obviously gets more complicated. Okay, this was at ghost number zero. This is at ghost number one. Sorry, at ghost number two, just to answer your question. So in the massless, at the massless level, it's just lambda alpha, lambda beta. You have now a bispinner here. Let me call it A star. And if you analyze the cohomology, you find that it's the same cohomology. At ghost number zero, you just have omega. So q omega equals zero just tells you that it has a zero mode. Okay, maybe this is a good place to stop for questions. So far, this is just review.
This A star beta, what does that mean?
This is the anti-field. So it's not... So if you expand it in components, I could also expand A alpha. So expanding A alpha in components, what you find is that the gauge field, the usual gauge field, sits at order theta. If you expand A star, what you find is that the usual gauge, the star to the gauge field sits at order theta to the fourth. But you can go through the poem. There's no tachyon in this formula.
So you don't need to do the
projection? No. So here, space-time supersymmetry is manifest. Okay, to compute scattering amplitudes, let's just do massless amplitude. This will serve as the massless unintegrated vertex operator. To compute amplitudes, one also needs the massless integrated vertex operator.
Just follow that. I mean, if you put in unstable brains and so on, you can see...
I don't know how to do that.
You don't know.
So the BPS deep gradient you can do easily, but the non-BPS, I don't know how. It suggests somehow that the theta should become anti-periodic, but I don't know. Okay, so this is the unintegrated one. Now, normally one gets the integrated vertex operator just by taking the commutator of B with V. Now, this we don't know how to do just because there's no obvious B ghost or C ghost. When we have this n equals 2 framework, this will become possible. But so at the moment, I need some other way to get the integrated one. So normally one defines the integrated one. So this gives you a dimension 1 object. Now, another way to get it, which actually implies this once one has a B ghost, is that one requires that Q of U is equal to dV. And now we have Q and we know V, so that can determine U. And in fact, one finds that U has a nice form. It's just A alpha theta alpha plus AM IM. This is actually the Green-Schwarz version of the integrated vertex operator. But now there's an additional term, which is so these are the field strengths for Yang-Mills. So W alpha can be defined as
this sort of an integral.
This is the unintegrated. This is dimension 1. So it will be integrated.
Right.
So W alpha is related. It's the field strength, which you can define as the commutator of del beta with del m. And F is the usual. So in four dimensions, this would just be the usual. I mean, in n equals 1, d equals 4, this would. Now, the lowest component of this is the gauge Eno, and the lowest component of this is the field strength for the gluon. Okay, so now to compute scattering amplitude. Okay, so first tree amplitude.
So are you going to use this as a clue to find B?
Yes. So these will, before I go to the new stuff, so I'll probably be about 20 more minutes reviewing the loop amplitudes, tree amplitudes and loop amplitudes. And then I will show how to recover this kind of structure using this n equals 2. But in some sense, this is simpler. So maybe I should say it now. To get this B ghost, you have to introduce some non-minimal field.
Some?
Non-minimal field. So fields which, in a gauge, decouple. So in some sense, non-minimal.
So in...
I don't know if this language is the usual language, but if you have a VRT operator and you just add the usual quartet of fields, so let me call it, I don't know, gamma B, then I'm going to think of these fields as non-minimal because they decouple from the cohomology. And in fact, when compute scattering amplitudes, one can also choose gauges. So this formalism, as I wrote it down, as I will describe now for computing scattering amplitudes, it's not manifestly reparameterization invariant. In the sense that because I don't have a B ghost, my integrated vertex operators are, I have to put the B ghost exactly on top of the unintegrated one. Whereas if it was reparameterization invariant, I could put the B ghost wherever I want. In some sense, one can think of this special gauge as being the gauge in which these non-minimal fields cancel out in the scattering amplitude. So it's also reminiscent of what happens, for example, in these BPS scattering amplitudes in n equals 2 string theory, where there are some scattering amplitudes in which part of the theory just cancels out or decouples.
So this is a bit funny. I mean, normally you add the non-minimal things before you gauge fix, and then you rotate them to gauge fix.
Yeah, so
here you're adding them to the gauge fix.
No, I haven't added them yet. Let me stop, because I have to start from scratch to do the n equals 2. If I try to...
Okay.
So I was just answering the question of what I meant by non-minimal. So people who already know this stuff about the amplitudes will have to be patient, because otherwise there's no point in doing the n equals 2 first. Okay, so to compute the amplitudes, one needs to have a rule for... For computing, for example, the correlation functions of these objects. So suppose I have three of them. So the simplest non-zero amplitude is just 3-point tree amplitude. So this is lambda alpha 1 Here, just zero modes contribute, so... The only thing I have to do is give you a rule for computing the zero mode correlation function. And the rule is slightly bizarre.
You're not going to tell us anything to make it less bizarre, will you?
Yes, I will.
In the zero mode?
Yes. Okay. But the rule is still simplest in written this way. That's why I don't want to start by it. So I'm just going to define this to be equal to 1. So it's something with 5 thetas and 3 lambdas. And the thing that's natural about it from the pure spinner point of view is that this state is the element at ghost number 3, there's a single state in the cohomology, and this is that state. So in some sense, it's the state of highest ghost number. So in bosonic string, the analog would be C, D, C, D squared C, which is also, of course, normalized to be 1. But because these thetas have 16 zero modes and the lambdas have 11 zero modes, it's a little bit strange why one would want to. So this naturally comes from integrating over the C zero modes. This does not. So it's not difficult to see that with this definition, you get the right answer. So what you get is, you, when you compute this amplitude, you just get, in components, you would get, okay, the usual Yang-Mills cubic coupling, so something of this type. Now, there's a nice way to write this in which one works with all the zero modes, using this picture lowering operator that I'm just going to say briefly what it is, just because it does not turn out to be related to this n equals 2 string, but it does give some explanation of this, which is, instead of working with 3 of these and defining it in this way, I can define a new kind of norm in which y plays the role of a picture. So if there are questions, I'm happy to explain what I mean by this. But there's an operator in the cohomology which plays the role of a picture-lowering operator in the sense that it involves delta functions of the zero modes of lambda.
You don't want 1 there. You have an A.
Oh, sorry. This is my amplitude. Right. This is supposed to be equal to... Thanks. In which, using this type of norm, I really do mean integration over d11 lambda d16 theta.
What is C?
Oh, C is some direction I have to choose. C is probably a bad letter, but... So this description is not manifestly Lorentz covariant, but one can show that Y only changes by something BRST trivial when I do a Lorentz transformation.
C is bosonic?
C is a, yeah, it's a chosen direction.
Y11 means the dot product of 11 dots of lambda.
That's right, of Y, that's right. And each one with different C. So each Y would choose a different direction of the lambda, which would set to 0.
So it's Y to the 11th power. So it's
that's
the
right.
Product over all, you should really define YI.
That's right, so this is YC, it depends on C. And there are 11 different Cs you have to choose. But the choice of the C's is irrelevant.
The product over all the Y's.
That's right. The choice of different C's is irrelevant because, so if you compute delta Y, delta C, it turns out to be Q of something. So it doesn't affect...
Delta Y to the 11th or delta Y over delta C?
Delta Y, delta C.
So for any Y?
For any Y. Each Y by itself has that property. It's not difficult. I can show you what omega is, but I'm not going to use it. So, and of course, because it also has the property that if you change the location, dy is also BRST trivial. And it's easy to see y is it's BRST exact. I mean, it's q of y is zero just because q takes theta to lambda, but c lambda just kills this. So if you insert 11 y's, then 11 of the theta zero modes are killed, and it just reduces to this. Now, this d11 lambda naively has ghost number 11, but that's actually, it doesn't work out that way, just because this is not a Lorentz covariant object. When you covariantize this, you find out it has ghost number 8. So that essentially explains the ghost number 8 that I had in my OP of J with T. So you can see that Y has ghost number minus 1. So this contributes ghost number minus 11.
What is A in the formula?
A is the, so I was doing for the massless. You can of course do this for any vertex upgrade, right?
Sorry, just help us read. Yeah, well,
that's right. So they're two different. So this is for any three. So on this side, I'm using this definition, where this is just the naive definition for integration over modes. And on this side, I'm using this special definition here that I called here. So that it's not difficult to show that that this is true.
Just one more time to clarify. So Y11 means the product over 11 different Ys.
That's right. So Y11 is
11 Cs. And
that's right. YC1. It turns out that it doesn't matter which Cs you choose. If you choose them all to be the same, it becomes 0 over 0.
So you want them to be
it's easier if you choose intermediate. Okay, both of these definitions are strange, okay? I don't want to, but at least they both give the right answer.
There's something that really seems awkward, which is that the 11 delta functions of the Ys will tell you to set lambda equals 0.
Yes, I agree.
It's really a nasty singularity, lambda equals 0.
Yes, I agree. So this is a formal...
It's better if you can localize such a permutation away from the singularity.
Yes. I agree. So in this n equals 2 framework, that will work out nicely. So I agree with you. So in some sense, this is very formal. It gives the right rules, but it's not so... Also, you have to choose directions, which is also not so natural. Okay, this was just for the 3-point amplitude. For n-point amplitudes, the only thing you have to do is put in the integrated vertex operators.
Yes.
So, okay, so in this language, in this language, it's just because the state of highest cohomology has ghost number 3. The state of highest ghost number with non-zero cohomology is 3. In this language, it's because the Ys carry ghost number minus 1. So there's a ghost number anomaly, which is minus 8. So that tells you that these have to have ghost number 3. Okay, so now we want to do loops. Okay, so for loop amplitudes, the way it was done up to now, which is, at the end of the talk I will say something about how to get loops using n equals 2, but the things I will say are not worked out in a detailed way, so I don't want to emphasize the fact that I can do loops. But certainly tree amplitudes I will be able to reproduce using this n equals 2 language. Okay, so to do loops, are there any questions about this?
Well, your formula is because you have 11 delta functions setting 11 components of lambda to 0.
Okay, so...
one by constraints, the rest is 0. And then you're supposed to do an interval of 3 lambda A's with all those constraints
and get
something
nice. Okay, so let me... Okay, so there's a question. Yeah, okay, so let me... So I'm happy to... So I have to tell you what this meant by this integration. Okay. So let me tell you first. So this actually is not.
I guess you have to work out the measure.
Yes.
What you mean there, you chose the computation of lambda space by the 11 free variables.
Yeah, and that's not the correct one. That's right. That's not the correct. I wrote it in. Yeah.
The measure will be something tricky, but singularity.
Yeah, okay. That's right. So the way you want to write this in a covariant way. So what happens is that you can show that when these are pure spinners, they satisfy the property that d lambda alpha 1, d lambda alpha 11 can be written as lambda times some scalar, let me call it d lambda. I don't know if you can see. There's a Lorentz covariant tensor one can construct, Lorentz invariant tensor, which is anti-symmetric in 11 indices and symmetrized and geometric traceless in these three. And that's essentially the thing I just erased here. This is... Yes. So this T is essentially, if you peel off all the lambdas and thetas from this expression, you get the T. So one can, so for any choice of C, one can get some non-zero. One can get some. One can compute this.
So you need to multiply by three lambdas.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Okay. Are there other questions about the tree? Okay. So let me say how to get this to loops, because for loops is the first place that I'm going to have to start using this B ghost. So that will give me a clue about how to construct this B ghost. Okay. So loop amplitudes naively. Okay. One has integrated vertex operators. So if we're not in one loop, we can have all of these be integrated. And now one needs things which not only soak up the zero modes for the lambdas, but now we'll have to soak up the zero modes for the conjugates to them. So the y's essentially are the same as in the tree amplitude, because the thetas, the number of their zero modes, the lambdas are scalars on the Wilczek, so their zero modes are always are independent of the genus.
So this should be a double bracket.
Yes, thanks. So the single bracket, I don't know how to do that for a loop. Okay, now one also needs to absorb the zero modes for the conjugates to the lambdas, which I'm calling the W's. So just as in RNS, one has picture lowering and picture raising operators, one also has picture raising operators here. And one way, just as a C's, you have to choose a direction. Instead of constraining the W's zero modes, I'm going to work with the N zero modes, because the W zero modes are not gauge invariant, but the N zero modes are. So this definition, because I'm working with the N's here, that's why there's an extra lambda here. So I can also write this as Q. In the Verlinde-Verlinde notation for picture-raising operators, they think of step functions. So you can think of Xi as being the step function of, I guess, the beta ghost. So here it's going to be the step function of, so I'm calling R. So R is just some constant tensor. So this is the analog of the picture-raising operator. So you can say, in the same way as in RNS, it's Q with C, this plays that role. And this will constrain the zero modes of the W's through the end.
Here you have just one RNS.
So, okay, so there are 11 different lambdas and 11 different W's. So I will need 11 of these Z's. But now...
11 different R's?
That's right. That's right. Okay, so this is the expression I'm going to try to compute. And now I need, of course, my 3G minus 3 B ghosts. So this I haven't told you what it is yet. Okay, now the B ghost has ghost number minus 1. And in this formalism, the only thing with minus 1 ghost number is W, which is not gauge invariant. So I'm not going to be able to construct the B ghost out of the W. But what I can construct instead of constructing the B ghost is I can construct something which has the property of the B ghost times the picture raising operator. So the idea is I'm going to change this instead of 3G minus 3 to be instead of being 11G here, it's going to be 8G plus 3. So this I know how to define. Because the Z's have ghost number plus 1. That's because of this lambda here. So now I can look for something. The B ghost has the property that Q with B is T. That has no solutions. But there is something which has this property.
Remind us what R is.
So R is just a fixed direction.
R is just, you know,
just like C, I guess.
That's right.
What is mu?
So mu is the Beltrami differential. Okay, so the thing I'm going to spend a little bit time now.
Sorry, what's on the right? Doing what?
What is on the right?
No, you have
doubles on the left and singles on the right.
Oh, I'm sorry. So this is the end. This is a genus. Okay, now I'm going to spend a little bit of time constructing this B, because this is going to be related to this n equals 2 description. So, I don't think... Okay. So this is the prescription which was used to compute... up to 4.2 loop amplitude. If I have time in the end, maybe I will say how these 4.2 loop amplitudes look. But for the moment, let me just concentrate on the construction of this BZ. Okay, so ZR has this structure. So the first thing I'm going to look for is an object which I will call B alpha, which satisfies this property. So, although I can't find one which satisfies T, I can find one which satisfies this. And I'm not going to go through the computation, but it's not so complicated. So it has this structure. Now this term here is actually the term was actually discussed by Siegel also 20 years ago as one of the constraints that he proposed, which is related to... So he tried to build a set of first-class constraints on the d's and pi's, which would be used to quantize the string. So this is actually a piece... So this is one piece of this B. But there's some other pieces which depend on the pure spinners. So using this object, one can now construct... So if one takes... Let me call this object... So this is Z. Let me remove this R just to... Let me define this as being lambda alpha Z alpha. So I've pulled the lambda alpha off. Okay. I'm just doing this in order to show how you construct this B ghost here. So Q with B alpha Z alpha. Q with B alpha gives me lambda alpha T. So this gives me the term I want. But now there's an additional piece which comes from the Q with the Z alpha. So there's a plus. I guess this is commutative. Which is no longer zero. So Q with lambda alpha Z alpha is zero, but not Q with Z alpha, because I pulled the lambda alpha off. So if I didn't have this term, I would be finished. But because of this term, I need to add something else. So what you find is that if I look at Q Z alpha, okay, it's somewhat complicated, but it has a term which comes... So Z alpha is just this without the D, without the lambda here. So you'll get something like pi slash delta Rn. So I'm being schematic here. The indices are not important. And you'll get another term which is lambda D. You'll get one term when the Q hits on this D, and you'll get another term when the Q hits on this delta function. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to write this, define this to be equal to lambda alpha z alpha beta. So I'm going to do the same trick. I'm going to pull a lambda off. So this is going to be written as lambda beta z alpha beta. And now I'm going to try to write this as Q of something. So if I can write this as Q of something, then again I'm finished. Because then I can pull that something onto the other side, and that will give me this B ghost. Okay, you can almost do that. So I'm not going to go through the whole story. I can erase this. Somebody's taking notes. I'm erasing that. This is all old stuff in there. So this you can write as Q of H plus something else again. So this object here can be written as something which is BRST trivial multiplied by Z alpha beta. So this is equal to Q plus something else again. This structure was actually worked out nicely by Odin Tonin. So in any case, I'll just write the final answer. So what you find is that the BC can be written as B alpha Z alpha plus there's three of these. And then the last term has four. Sorry. So it's somewhat of a mess. But it's what comes out. So I will tell you what H and K and L are. So B I've written down here. Yeah.
So everything is constructed out of Z alpha except for the H term.
Let me just write down and then I'll tell you. Okay. Everything. So the B ghost is constructed. So Z's are defined. Z's came. So lambda alpha Z alpha is equal Z. Q lambda alpha Z alpha beta is equal Q of Z alpha, etc.
So that's a typo. You really mean Z alpha beta gamma and Z alpha beta gamma delta.
Oh, thank you.
That's what I said.
Worse than a typo, please. Thank you.
Descent equations.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's basically descent equation.
Yeah. Okay, and it stops here. Now, the fact that it stops is, well, one can see it from this language just because there's nothing, these are all conformal weight 2, and there's nothing one can write down which has, n is essentially the top thing, the top object in the theory. Okay, so this is the B ghost. And it's ugly, but it has one property which turns out to be useful for computing amplitudes, which when we compute amplitudes, essentially, it all comes down for the simplest amplitudes to counting zero modes. And at genus G, one has 16 betas and 16 G D alphas. So zero modes. So these are zero modes. And if one doesn't have all these zero modes, then the amplitude vanishes. And the B ghost, okay, you can get some D's from the vertex operators and from these, but essentially all the D's other D's have to come from the B ghost. So when one has a suitable small amount of vertex operators, then one can work out these vanishing theorems just by counting zero modes. And it turns out that the B ghost has... So you can count... It has a maximum of four D's. So for example, this term here has two D's coming from here, and there are also two D's coming from the Z's. So one can work out vanishing theorems in that way. I don't think it's useful to do that now, but I don't think I'll have time now. But if people want, I can do that.
So this B ghost would also depend on this chosen matrix R, no?
That's right.
Are you happy with that?
No, okay, so for the same... So one can... Right, so in the same way as I mentioned for Y, the choice of R is irrelevant for the Z's. If you change R, you find that Z changes by something BRC trivial. For the B ghost, it's... First for Z.
Okay.
Now, if I change R here, you're right, it's a little bit trickier, but what you have to do is you have to move the Z away from the B ghost. So, okay, I agree that it's a subtle point. Maybe I'll leave it there. So you want to show that Z being BRC... So if I change R here, then... the ZR will change here, but it will change by something which is BRST trivial. And so then you will want to change this by the same amount. So this will change by something which is BRST trivial. Let's call it Q of omega R. And now you want to change this by omega R and show that that doesn't change the scattering amplitude. Okay. In any case, the way I eventually hope to describe the theory is without these subtleties, but... So this formalism was used to compute loop amplitudes, and at least up to 4.2 loop amplitudes, it seems to give the same results as RNS. So the 4.2 loop expression actually goes a little bit beyond the RNS in the sense that you can also compute external fermions, but the index contraction has not yet been worked out. So that still needs to be worked out to check that it agrees. For example, at two loops, you'll find the d to the fourth out of the fourth term, and the index contraction here has not yet been worked out. Okay, at one loop, it actually was worked out by Engelhoff, Grassi, and Van Horven. They showed that it agreed for the 4-point. Okay, so now let me try to discuss how these ingredients naturally appear in the n equals 2 framework. So I apologize for this lengthy review, but I'm going to use these ingredients now for the n equals 2. Okay, so are there questions?
How much time do you need for the n equals 2?
About an hour. Should we take a break?
Maybe we should take 10 minutes.